Okay, let's get started. We got a big schedule today. Thank you for attending. Lots of people here. We got a few more students than last time. Hey! Elaine. Debbie. Students, make sure you sign the attendance sheet either now or later. And for people from the community who aren't getting announcements but would like to get announcements, you sign the white one. And everybody gets a cookie because I want to ask you, which cookies are better? So I need to know. So let me know. Does anybody have any questions about Tuesday's lecture? People who didn't attend the class on Tuesday are welcome to review the recorded audio and slides and handouts and links on the course website. If you missed Tuesday's lecture, I have some handouts for you that you can get after class. They're also online. And if you're enrolled in the class and you missed the first class, I think I sent email to everybody, you can make up that class by reviewing all the course material on the website and emailing me a summary, 1 to 2 page summary of the lecture and your thoughts, which are most important, by email. And when I get the summary and read it, I'll credit you with attending the class. If you were here on Tuesday and didn't sign the pink attendance list, please let me know. It's very important that you do so every time because that confirms your attendance. So today, this is our schedule, and we're going to get started because we've got a pretty full schedule. You're going to see lots of people today. Today is what I call pitch day, where people who have suggested projects pitch them to you, and we got lots of projects to go through. So, but first I want to introduce Crystal. Oh, she moved. Yeah, if you're more comfortable talking to Crystal than me, you know, that's fine, because she's closer to your age than I am, so if that makes a difference for you. Okay. Next, I want to introduce some people that I call course resource people, and these are people that will help you with your projects. These are people, all these people I know, many of them work with me at the VA or in class with me or... So Debbie Kenny is here. She's in the back. This is a picture from long ago. And Doug Schwant is a mechanical engineer. Debbie is an occupational therapist. Satki is not here. Gary is here. Where's Gary? Okay. And he's a project suggester as well. Mark Felling is an individual who's a proprietor of this business called Broadened Horizons. So it's a store that sells devices for people with disabilities, and Mark himself is a wheelchair user and quadriplegic. And Jules Sherman. Jules, you'll see her later today, and she's also on the schedule to do a lecture later on in the quarter. So Jules is a product designer, so she can help you with that. All these people are waiting for you to call them. Right, right. So call them early and often. They are members of your team. You should consider them members of your team. Any questions at all? These people have years of experience. Well, except for Jules. She's the youngest one of the bunch. Okay. Okay. But first, we're going to get started with a review of the PRL in room 36, and we welcome Marlo to the stage. The many faces of Marlo. So clip that on. Clip this on.
I'll just have to hold that.
Okay, fine.
Cool. Hi, everybody. I'm Marlo. I'm part of the Product Realization Lab. A lot of you guys actually look familiar, so you might have heard about this, but this is a great resource on campus for students working on projects. The idea is about making physical things. If you're creating something that can be touched and held and used, either as a prop or as an actual product, this is a great place that you can come and work. Mostly today, I'm going to be talking about Room 36, which is just a small part of the Product Realization Lab, but is, for rapid prototyping, and Dave thinks in the context of this class, probably the most useful resource for you. Although if you sort of expand beyond that, we can bring you up into the main lab and help you do whatever you need to do. Some of the great things about the PRL is that there are a lot of fantastic resources. Dave has talked about some of the people that are resources specifically for this course. The PRL has 18 teaching assistants that are also fantastic resources for you. They are either graduate students in mechanical engineering or product design. And their job when the shop is open is to help answer your questions, whether it's a design question, how to specifically make something, or even sort of more general about like what class you should take next or something like that. These are people that, for most part, have been at Stanford for several years. They're really great people to talk to, whether it's something really specific or even if it's just a very loose sketch that you might have of what you're trying to make, they can really help you do that. There's a lot of great tools, which are really cool. I say people first because I think people are the most important resource. But tools are really fun, too. Also, you can use laser cutters, 3D printers, some hand tools. These are things that you don't have to become, you don't have to be an expert at. We will teach you how to use them. Electronics prototyping is a great thing. Maybe you have some device you're making that has some sensors, or, you know, if you bump something with too much force, maybe it turns the light on or something like that. We have teaching assistants that can help you do that if you've never done any sort of electronics work before. And we have lots of cool materials there. You may have been on lots of cool project classes and your dorm room may be sort of overflowing with junk and materials and cool stuff. Or you may just be getting started in design and making stuff. So we have sort of some starter bins for you to get started with projects. Maybe you want some foam because it's going to, like, you know, wrap something around your arm. We have lots of different kinds of foam. Maybe not the perfect foam for you, but something that you can get started with, and then we can help you find something that might be better for you. You can leave project stuff there. We've got some bins and things like that. That seems like a minor thing, but sometimes it's really nice when your project starts getting big and you don't want to carry it through the rain. So here's where we are right now in the Thornton building. And we have our main lab is just down the street in building 610. And then in room 36 is over in the Wong Engineering Center, which is where Ike's Sandwiches is. We're down on the basement level there. And then to get started, all you need to do is take a safety orientation. It's not a super serious training. It takes about a little bit over an hour just to orient you to the space. You know, the tools that we have are potentially dangerous, but we want you just to get sort of a basic overview of what you need to be aware of, and then as you need to use a specific tool, we'll train you how to use that properly, you know, safely, but also use it well and be able to get your work done. I don't know if Dave will send this out, but you're welcome to email me if you have any specific questions. But, you know, basically you can just stop by anytime as well. I guess that's on to your next stuff.
Okay.
And does anybody have any questions right now? Yeah. You don't have, that's a great question. You don't have to take the safety class again if you took it last quarter. You do have to take it every academic year. So if you took it, say, like last spring or last winter, you do have to take it again this year. We always get new equipment and new policies and things like that. So we do have a sort of a restart every year. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Marlo. We get to where we need to be.
Okay, let me give you some instructions for people who are working on projects. You know, there's two kinds of projects. There's the team projects for people working on taking the course for three units. Teams are defined as teams of one, two, or three students. The idea that what we're going to do is show you a bunch of projects, and you have the handout from Tuesday. And so as the pitches go on, you know, check to see which ones you like and don't like. And I think it'd be good to narrow it down somewhat. At the end of the class, there'll be an opportunity for you to talk to the people who pitched the project. Most of them will stick around. There'll be a time for you to sort of get together and see if you have common interests. But if that doesn't work out, just send me your name and your three top project interests, and I'll publish that for the class, and so you can get a better idea as who's interested in what. And once you get a team formed, you want to have a name for your team. You know, let's be politically correct about it, and a name for your project. And after you work on your device a little bit, it will have an identity of its own, and you can name your device. Okay. For people working on individual projects, these are students who are taking the course for one unit with a letter grade. You can work on five of these things. Just write a paper about a assistive technology topic or device. Work on a paper design. Create a work of art if you're compelled to do so. If you're not an engineer, that might be a good option. Also engage in things called aftermarket aesthetic design, aftermarket functionality, usability. And these are adding these features to products that are already out there. And Jules will show us a great example of that later on. But you have to meet with me so we can agree on your project. I can offer some suggestions, but I would like to make sure that you're working on something that's the right scale for a one-unit project for one quarter. Okay? Any questions about that? Now, for team projects, there's some issues here. Obviously, you all the team members should want to work on the same project. You know, that's sort of important. And it would be best if all the team members were either undergraduates or graduates, but that's not a firm type thing. Another issue is your desire to, take the project into ME113 or another senior project course. But you can continue your project in the spring quarter as independent study as well. So if you want to work on it some more, you know that those are options for you. This is pretty important. You want to look and see what the project is going to entail. If it's going to be a mechanical thing, it's going to be electronics, it's going to be programming. You only have basically 7 weeks in this course to work on a team project. So it's a very short time to come up with something functional and testable. So it's probably not the time, if you don't know programming or Java, to learn Java and do a project in 7 weeks. So if you have questions about this, you can ask me. And I haven't had a problem with team members not getting along with others, but that's a possibility. I've heard it happening in other courses. And this is sort of critical. Any project course takes up time. And you should really take a look at what other stuff that you're doing. Courses like ME210, 218, ME310 are very time-consuming. And if you commit to both of those, either you're not going to get any sleep or you're not going to do very well in either project class. So you need to know what your limits are. So these are the projects that are going to be pitched in person today, and in order to get through this, we're going to have 3 minutes for each project, except for Molly. She's doing presenting two projects. There's Molly. Okay. So some of the order has changed from what was printed, but it's all there. So there's going to be some that aren't pitched in person, but are valid projects for you to consider, and I'll do my best to pitch them at the end. So let's get started with the inhaler use monitor project. Rush and Brian, come on down. The on-deck people are listed here, so get ready for next person. Fernanda? Oh, you have to go out and get in here at this door. Go out and make a left and right here. No, just no.
Okay.
Close together.
All right. There we go. And then how do we click? All right. Hi, I'm Ryan Van Wert. I'm a lung doctor at the hospital at Stanford and also part of the biodesign program this year.
And I'm Rush Bartlett. I'm a PhD and an MBA, also working in the biodesign program.
And we'd like to tell you about an idea that we have from our clinical needs observations in the hospital that has to do with asthma. And this is a, somewhat out of focus, I apologize, a picture under the microscope of a normal airway. And you can see right here that there's a large... Oh, is there? There. Is that it? There's a large area here where air can flow as we breathe in and out. Now, contrast that with an asthmatic airway that you can see right here. There's a lot of inflammation, and you can imagine breathing through those airways. It's kind of like breathing through a straw. So our goal with treating asthma is to move this airway to that airway. But when we don't do that, we give people these inhalers that I'm sure you've all seen to use when they have symptoms. And that is very important for us to know how much, it's very important for us to know how much they're using these, because that correlates with how well that inflammation is being controlled. 30 million people have asthma, and it costs the healthcare system $50 billion a year.
So, can I put it on? Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, so this is one idea that's out there of a company that's trying to monitor how often someone uses their inhaler. Now, the problem with this is that, you know, if you go to the doctor's office, the person's not going to know if they used it five times in the week or once time in the week, typically, and, you know, people don't really keep track of things. So doctors don't have a good idea of how much of a drug they should give and what type of drug. So these people are putting a little device on top of the inhaler, and they're charging about $2,500 to do this. And not only that, but you have to go and you have to get a prescription. It's a big pain in the neck. But what they're doing is they're taking all this data that they're getting and they're putting it into different pollen reports and weather and different locations, and so they can really efficiently track, you know, if you have asthma, you shouldn't go to Chipotle because 12 other people with asthma had to use their inhaler at that point.